Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ira Melman. The family of a slain British lawmaker speaks out. The man charged with murdering British lawmaker Joe Cox gave his name as Death to Traitors, Freedom for Britain when he appeared in court on Saturday, accused of a killing that has left next week's vote on European Union membership in limbo. The murderer of Cox, a 41-year-old mother of two young children, has shocked Britain, elicited condolences from leaders around the world, and raised questions about the tone of campaigning ahead of the EU referendum. The family of Joe Cox paid tribute to the parliamentarian, speaking next to a makeshift memorial in Birstall Saturday. Her sister, Kim Ledbetter, described the 41-year-old as a dedicated mother and local representative who will live on through all of the good people in the world.
We want to say a most sincere and heartfelt thank you to everyone who has expressed their love and affection for Joe and sent their thoughts and sympathy to us. It has genuinely made a difference and helped us through some dark times in the last 48 hours.
Ledbetter said Cox's death had left her family broken, but she added they were determined to mend over time and never let Joe leave our lives. Iraqi forces gained control of the main hospital in Fallujah Saturday and were clearing mines after driving the Islamic State group from most of the city, one of its last remaining strongholds in the Anbar province west of Baghdad. Brigadier General Haider al-Obeidi told the Associated Press that fighting was still underway in parts of the city where the United States and Iraqi warplanes targeted snipers and other IS positions. Read more about this on our website. It is voanews.com. This is VOA News. Secretary of Defense Ash Carter of the United States has slammed Russia for bombing U.S.-backed opposition forces in southern Syria, calling the actions problematic. Speaking to reporters at the Pentagon Friday, Carter said the fighters hit by Russia's airstrikes were fighting against the Islamic State militant group. He said the Russians either intentionally attacked the rebels, which would conflict with their stated goal of defeating IS, or they fired on the rebels by accident as a result of poor quality intelligence. The secretary also suggested the Russian military did not properly use a communication line that was established between the two countries to prevent unsafe U.S. and Russian air operations over Syria. One of five Hong Kong booksellers whose disappearances sparked international concern on Saturday led a protest attended by thousands in the semi-autonomous Chinese city against Beijing's alleged suppression of freedom of speech. Lam Wing Kee, who went missing 8 months ago after crossing into the mainland, returned to Hong Kong Tuesday. His revelation of months spent in harrowing detention by mainland Chinese authorities earlier this week has inflamed tense relations between the semi-autonomous city and Beijing. Some of the protesters, including student Tang Hu Yangso, also expressed worries about the one country, two systems policy between Hong Kong and China.
I come from this protest because we know that the one country, two system is really being damaged because we know that Mr. Lam, the owner from the bookshop selling like politics books, is being oppressed in the mainland China and being arrested in a really illegal way.
The saga of the missing booksellers underscores growing fear in Hong Kong that Beijing is tightening its hold on the city and eroding its considerable autonomy. A Soyuz capsule carrying a crew from the International Space Station made a successful parachute landing Saturday in Kazakhstan. The three-man returning crew included U.S. astronaut Tim Kopra, British astronaut Tim Peake, and Russian cosmonaut Yuri Melenchenko. Peake was the first British astronaut to have gone to the ISS. The landing Saturday took place about 3 hours after the crew separated from the orbiting space station, ending their six-month excursion. Russian federal investigators have opened a criminal case against the former director of the Moscow's anti-doping laboratory on charges of abuse of power. Grigory Rodchenkov, who has fled the United States, revealed last month, he fled to the U.S., revealed last month an elaborate doping cover-up scheme at the 2014 Sochi Olympics. I'm Ira Melman.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
The Commission firstly has observed with dismay the rising levels of intolerance and violence.
The Electoral Commission of Zambia warns political parties and their supporters to desist from engaging in violence ahead of the upcoming August polls.
The Kenyan government is more vigilant now. You know, terrorist strikes have not happened, not because Al-Shabaab did not try.
The Kenyan government implements measures to help stop Al-Shabaab.
Things such as health centers are very few in this region. We are hard-pressed to provide support to the internally displaced or to the refugees.
And UN agencies say rapid assistance is needed for over 2.7 million people displaced by the Boko Haram insurgency. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Electoral Commission of Zambia has warned political parties and their supporters to stop engaging in violence as the parties intensify their campaigns for the August 11 general election. This following accusations and counter-accusations between supporters of the ruling Patriotic Front Party, or PF, and the main opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND. Chris Akofuna, spokesman for the Electoral Commission, told me the Constitution empowers the electoral body to prevent a political party as well as candidates from participating in elections.
The Commission firstly has observed with dismay the rising levels of intolerance and violence. And to that effect, the Commission has condemned this behavior, the intolerance and violence. And it is for that reason that the Commission has reminded political parties that they should conduct their campaigns peacefully. If they do not, the Commission will invoke its powers contained in Section 28 and Section 110 of the Electoral Process Bill, which empowers the Commission to suspend campaigns or indeed disqualify a candidate. And that's basically the basis.
How does the Commission get to the bottom of investigating these violent activities meted out or carried out by these political cadres? When does the investigation begin? When does the Electoral Commission say enough is enough, we're going to do this? Because since the campaign began, there has been accusation and counter-accusation by these political parties for some time now. So when does the Commission say enough is enough, we're going to do this?
It is for that reason that the Commission has decided, firstly, to remind them and to warn them. So we have made it clear that we are watching events unfolding, and if that behavior continues, the Commission will have no alternative but to invoke that part of the law, either to follow up on these political parties that are reported to be causing violence, or indeed to disqualify their candidates.
If the Commission disqualifies a candidate, what does that mean? Does that mean the party would have to nominate a fresh candidate to contest, or the party's chances are null and void and will not participate in the election?
Yeah, I mean, if it's a disqualification, it will mean just that one will not participate in an election. And it's for that reason that we are reminding them to say, please, can you cage your followers? Can you cage your supporters?
Does the Electoral Commission work or partner with the security agencies in the country to help curb this incidence of violence?
The maintenance of law and order is a privilege of the Zambia police. And we, in our statement this morning, have called on the Zambia police to deal firmly with perpetrators of violence.
After this warning, what happens next? Will the Electoral Commission now be monitoring?
We are watching.
So whatever happened to the pledge that these political parties made with the religious groups not to engage in violent activities and all that, what happened to it?
That is the question they will need to answer. We were not part of that meeting where they met the church, but we are aware that yes, they made a pledge that they are going to conduct themselves in a peaceful manner. The church is equally disturbed, and we have heard statements from the church condemning the rising levels of violence.
So will the Electoral Commission now send a team or some officials to monitor activities of these political parties? Since you said the ECZ is watching, what is the watching? What does it mean?
Okay, yeah, but bear in mind, the Commission perhaps does not have that capacity to investigate. So it is a question of working with the Zambia police just to see how it unfolds, because the Zambia police has following up on these issues, and in some cases, they are making arrests. So we will work with them and watch as things unfold, and where indeed the evidence will be found, the commission will have to make a decision.
So what will be your message to the people of Zambia, particularly those cadres who have been accused of carrying out violence against their opponents?
We have stated, even in that morning statement, we have stated that it is not necessary at this stage for Zambians, really, to attack each other on account of an election, which will pass. And we still have to live together, regardless of our opinion, regardless of our differences in political party beliefs or indeed ideology. So we have reminded them and we told them that it is not necessary, and we are still calling on them to respect one another, to respect the differences in opinion, and realize that we all cannot be the same. And so one is bound to support one political party that I don't support, or indeed another.
Chris Akufuna is the spokesman for the Electoral Commission of Zambia. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. A senior advisor to Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta says the government in Nairobi is implementing measures to help prevent the recruitment of the country's youth into terrorist groups, including the Somali-based Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab. This after Samuel Kobia participated in a training course organized by the United States Institute of Peace in Washington, D.C. about combating terrorism. Kobia told me the government is determined to win the fight against terrorism despite the challenges.
If you consider how the Kenyan government has addressed the issue of terrorism in the last 1.5 to 2 years, you will see that other than the attack that took place about a year and 3 months ago in at the University of Garissa, there has not been any other strike, which means that the Kenyan government is more vigilant now. Terrorist strikes have not happened because Al-Shabaab did not try. In fact, they tried. So there are many times that the government of Kenya has been ahead and they have been able to forestall such attacks.
Politically speaking, there have been calls and protests by opposition called demanding the disbandment of IEBC, among other issues. Raila Odinga, the former prime minister, came out saying that he had an agreement with the president and all that stuff. What is the way forward? Because it appears that tension is rising.
Political temperature in Kenya has gone a notch up, I would say, since the opposition started demonstrations against the independent electoral and boundaries commission. Now, what the president has done, and that's what I would say is the right thing to do, is to say, let us follow the Constitution and the law. And the Constitution is very clear when it comes to a ways and a means of changing commissioners in any independent commission. And the IEBC is one of the constitutional independent commissions. So it is very clear it has to be done within the framework of Parliament.
That is understood. However, the chairman of the independent body, IEBC, is on record to have cast aspersions at the opposition leader that the opposition say undermines his integrity to head that very commission that is supposed to be an independent body, basically saying he's biased in favor of the president.
Yes, that is the allegations and accusations that have been advanced as a way of supporting the call for the chairman and his commission to leave office. It's okay for, CORD or ODM to say that they don't trust the chair and the commissions. But then for them to try and go and physically remove them from office, that is really very dangerous. You know, even Jubilee is not saying that he should not be removed. But, of course, he has a right to defend himself.
Recently, an African Union panel proposed that a wholesale composition of the IEBC has to be done in order to ensure there's no post-election violence or pre-election violence in Kenya ahead of the next general election. What is the position of the government?
President Uhuru Kenyatta has been on record to say that we should do everything that is possible to have a peaceful and credible elections in 2017. And whatever it takes to make sure that we have such a peaceful and credible elections, the government is prepared to do. And if it is true that Isaac Hassan, the chairman of IEBC, and his commissioners cannot be trusted by one of the main stakeholders, that is the opposition, then obviously that has to be looked into. And I wouldn't feel that the president or Jubilee party and government are saying that Isaac Hassan and his commission must remain there, you know, regardless of the perceptions, even when it is just perception. Parliament is already ready. In fact, they have already put together a committee that is going to begin the process of finding out what exactly the problem is, and then they will resolve it.
Samuel Kobia is a senior advisor to Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta. He spoke with me from here in the VOA studios in Washington, D.C. Ahead of World Refugee Day Monday, UN agencies say rapid assistance is needed for the more than 2.7 million people displaced by the Boko Haram insurgency in the Lake Chad Basin over the past 3 years. The UN Refugee Agency has called it the fastest-growing displacement crisis in Africa. For VOA, Jennifer Lazuta has more from the Senegalese capital, Dakar.
Security continues to deteriorate in southeast Niger following a fresh spate of attacks by Boko Haram this month. Tens of thousands of people have flooded the city of Diffa after militants attacked the border town of Boso. Diffa was already hosting 240,000 displaced people, many of them from Nigeria. Belkacem Mashan, the deputy country director for the World Food Program in Niger, just returned from a visit to the worst affected areas.
We went through the main road called Route Nationale Numero 1, which is the main road going to Boso. And we saw so many people moving along the road, about 40,000, mainly women and kids. The situation was really bad. They are lacking water, food, shelter, and it was shocking.
WFP distributed 15-day emergency food rations to more than 1,400 newly displaced people. More food aid is on its way. The WFP says it hopes to be able to feed some 250,000 people in Diffa. But the area was chronically food insecure even before the conflict and the influx of refugees. Agricultural production there was below average last year. Insecurity has closed some markets. Along the border in northeast Nigeria, an estimated 16 million people also need food aid. But UN officials say delivering aid is difficult. Insecurity is an issue, and a number of people have had to flee multiple times. Liz Ahua is the regional representative for the UN Refugee Agency.
We work together with the police and with the military to orient them to those localities where they can stay. And this is not easily done, because quite obviously, if you're talking of the Lake Chad Basin, the governments are very stretched. They're very stretched in terms of their capacity to look after the protection of these people. Things such as health centers are very few in this region. We are hard-pressed to provide support to the internally displaced or to the refugees. There are people who are not receiving the help that they need.
UN agencies are requesting more than $500 million to deliver assistance to some 5 million people in the region. So far, that appeal is just 20% funded. Jennifer Lazuda for VOA News, Dakar.
Eritrea's Ministry of Information has said more than 200 Ethiopian troops were killed in a battle last week, one of the fiercest border clashes since the 1998-2000 war. Each side blames the other for starting the two-day battle, which broke out on Sunday, saying also that the rivals suffered the most losses. Hussein Kiflu is an Ethiopian social and political commentator. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached him in Dallas, Texas, for his take on the recent clashes.
I think the reason behind this latest flare-up at the border between Ethiopia and Eritrea is because the Ethiopian regime once again wants to deflect attention from serious, very, very serious problems cropping up in Ethiopia, you know, against its rule from different segments of the society. There is the Oromo protest, the ongoing Oromo protest, that it cannot, completely stamp out. And also, at the same time, as we know that there are opposition groups that have changed their strategy to arms struggle, and they are backed by the Eritrean government. And recently, somewhere in the southern part of Ethiopia, specifically in a town called Arbaminch, they challenged, they destroyed some, they killed some government, Ethiopian government soldiers, and they destroyed some of its weapons, I think. Mm-hmm. So the Ethiopian regime is really threatened. On top of that, they might have misread the recent UN resolution by the Commission of Inquiry on Eritrean Human Rights Situation. The Ethiopian rulers might have misread that the Western powers have given them a green light to launch an attack on the Eritrean regime, which is not the case.
The two countries have thousands of troops in one of the world's most heavily fortified borders. Do you think this is going to move forward, or do you think there's a way they can contain this?
I don't think so. For the moment, the flare-up seems to have stopped. In both countries, the season is moving to the... it's a rainy season, and, to continue a war in this rainy season for both countries, especially for Ethiopia, I don't think it's tenable. And the Ethiopian regime wants to inflict mainly this psychological warfare. You know, they want to show their force that we are still a force to reckon with. And also, it's this minority regime. They have to show their power to their Tigrayan supporters. But otherwise, I don't think so. They must be, completely full if they want to continue, carry out the war. Because, the season, the rainy season, will not be conducive to continue the war. And two, they don't have support. Now, you know, if you remember during the 1998 war, which continued up to 2000, at that time, at least, you know, they bamboozled the Ethiopians, you know, along the line of this, what they call sovereignty. That time, Ethiopians also had grievance against the Eritrean regime, because the Eritrean regime previously, they were comrades with the Tigrayan People's Liberation Front that is ruling Ethiopia now, the minority ethnic group. But now, many things have changed. Many things have changed. In fact, a considerable number of Ethiopians have become sympathetic towards Eritrea.
Do you buy the theory that this clash was a result or a response by Addis Ababa to an armed action by the Asmara-linked Gibnot 7 group in southern Ethiopia?
Yes, yes. Like I said, the Ethiopian regime seems to be threatened, you know. Now, they used to downplay the Gimbot Sabat's capacity to inflict armed resistance within Ethiopia. But now, you know, since they wrought havoc in Arbaminch against the Ethiopian regime force, now, yes, that's the primary, in fact, their primary target. That is the hidden motive. It's not about the Eritrean regime.
That was Hussein Kiflu, an Ethiopian social and political commentator. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Dallas, Texas. The International Organization for Migration, or IOM, says the discovery of 34 dead migrants in the Sahara this week brings the number of known migrant deaths on the African continent this year to 471. IOM believes these deaths may be only a fraction of the true number of migrant fatalities across North Africa. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more from Geneva.
The International Organization for Migration reports at least 120,000 migrants have passed through Niger this year on their way to Europe, yet the only deaths recorded by IOM in Niger are the 34 victims who died after being abandoned by their smuggler this week. The agency says many more people have died from exposure, starvation, or dehydration in the vast Sahara Desert. It says there also is an alarming trend of violent deaths from migrants in North Africa. IOM spokesman Joel Millman tells VOA that sexual attacks have been responsible for dozens of deaths.
This indicates terrible abuse of people en route, whether this is just armed men taking advantage of these people or it's part of sex trafficking. I don't really have the details on that. We do know of literally hundreds of women from Nigeria have been forced into prostitution in Libya after being told they didn't have enough money to make the trip up from Nigeria to the coast.
Millman says smugglers often mislead people by telling them the border is only 5 kilometers away. After taking their money, they leave the migrants to wander, often with fatal consequences.
We also hear about vehicles that run out of gas or become disabled in the high temperatures while waiting for relief. People die of dehydration. That's very common on that route.
IOM began its Missing Migrants Project nearly 18 months ago. In that time, it has recorded deaths for 678 migrants traveling in Africa, with 70 of those deaths occurring just in the past 2 weeks. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, Shaka goes one-on-one with Linda Thomas-Greenfield. The Assistant Secretary of State for the Bureau of African Affairs is America's top diplomat to Africa. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Next on Let's Talk, dual citizenship. Would you consider acquiring the citizenship of another country? Join host Sunday Shumari and his guests discussing dual citizenship. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
And you are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy.
Come making go every time we're rolling at the door. We have to become close. You put me like a drug, I overdose. I'm more like composed. I go give you anything, I know the jokes. When I pull up in a ghost, then we'll get another chance, but to the toast. We have baby, now you find passes. And if you ain't talk up, nobody go reach you. Go reach you. The way you shake that, the way you wind that, nobody go beat you. Go beat you. And I don't say you know, go pretend, cause you know this. Movies. You know the time you say, you know, remember, you know the story. But meanwhile,
Ashimakwe, he put it on.
Honey, guess who's saying?
Ashimakwe, he put it on.
Honey, guess who's saying?
Shala, one lady, one team of me. I want my blue, who you want to let me. Ashimakwe, he put it on.
He's Kappa.
Ashimakwe, he put it on.
Honey, guess who's saying?
Shala,
they call me Amadou. Just because I say I'm from Mushi. All of them, they call me Mala. They say that getting money is a must. So I guess get on Gala. I'm still thanking God for his blessing. Cause everything else, I got.
You know,
Ashima
Kwe, he put it point. Ashima Kwe, he put it
point. Ashima Kwe,
Shala Mole, he put it point. I want my blue.
She be heavyweight. I for carry you go into Johnny Lee. If you see her package, she be delicate. Baby in love. I go make your mother be my mother in love. Cause I'm in love. I go buy you anything, baby. Hello.
Yeah. She's touch my pan, no. Messing with my medulla. Play with my pan, no. I go buy you medusa. I'm breaking my fast tonight. Many regards tonight. I know this guy tonight. Baby reverse tonight. Just touch my pan, no. Messing with my medulla. Play with my pan, no. I go buy you medusa. Breaking my fast tonight. Many regards tonight. I know this guy tonight.
Baby, you know you're the ashes. It's not to put you the baddest. And if you never deserve it, I'll be loving you, baby, regardless. It's a madness. The package you carry is the largest. Baby, you look like a goddess. I go accommodate to my palace. Give the evidence for later. I go collect your name for my data. I wanna see you on your best behavior. If you don't, I won't deal with you ASAP. Straight up, me and you never go break up. If you fight to make love, we go make up. You the foundation, I break up. Push up, no. Come on, day, push up, no. Yeah. Push up, no. Come on, day, push up, no. Push up, no. Give me money. Push up, no. Cash money. Push up, no. And I'm loving her way. Push up, no. Yeah. Push up, no. Come on, day, push up, no. Yeah. Push up, no. Come on, day, push up, no. For you, I relocate though. We fly from London to Soweto. So baby, I'm gonna go Mexico. I feel you won't go Puerto Rico. I'ma use sweet and a mojito. Hurry up, baby, so make we go. Alele. Push up, no. Come on, day, push up, no. Yeah. Push up, no. Come on, day, push up, no.
Da da da.
No go compare.
Oh, oh, oh. Me myself,
me myself,
for my girl.
Yeah, be broke as long as you love me. Girl, I dare you. Yeah. Girl, I dare you. Yeah. Pray for me. Give up. Oh, Lord, if I know what's wrong. But then, your father is violent.
yeah, 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 yeah.
And that was Music from the Continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Mark Ferguson, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, it is when there's a stampede that a person with big buttocks knows that he carries a load. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next,
An editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Rooting out corruption is a key element of the United States democracy agenda, said U.S. Assistant Secretary for International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs William Brownfield. The United States works to lead by example in the fight against corruption. This includes programs to deny entry of corrupt foreign officials into the United States and efforts targeting perpetrators of corruption and their ill-gotten gains, both within the United States and around the world. The Department of Justice has successfully returned some $143 million in assets since 2004 and is currently litigating stolen asset cases involving more than $1 billion. To take another example, through the implementation of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, the United States combats the practice of bribing foreign officials. In recent years, the State Department determined to expand its anti-corruption initiatives, with the Bureau for International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs, or INL, managing anti-corruption programs across the globe. In Ukraine, INL supported the Interior Ministry's efforts to recruit, vet, and train 7,000 new patrol officers. As a result, the police now enjoy an 85% approval rating among Ukrainian citizens. There was also significant progress in Guatemala in 2015. Investigations by the International Commission Against Impunity in Guatemala, for which the United States has been a leading donor since 2008, led to arrests and the dismantling of corruption rings within the country's tax authority, penitentiary system, National Civil Police, Social Security Health Institute, and elsewhere. Most notably, Otto Perez Molina resigned the presidency and was incarcerated following an investigation. Fighting and preventing corruption is not only a government's responsibility. It requires a bottom-up approach to building citizens' demand for justice and accountability. With that in mind, the U.S. is working to expand civil society's role and empower citizens to hold their governments accountable. In Mexico, the U.S. supports training investigative journalists to uncover corruption at the local level. Citizens, journalists, and civil society must all be empowered to expose corrupt practices and feel safe enough to press for the prosecution of perpetrators. Fighting corruption is not just a moral fight for more ethical, just societies, said Assistant Secretary Brownfield. It is a fight we must wage both within our borders and alongside our international partners to protect our economic growth and stability, our security, and our future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.